Hello, this is Jay Nemrill. You're listening to Quasi-Indefatigable Zenil, as I am on my way back to glorious Tewkesbury from an exciting time in Clovis, getting a lot of things taken care of that the Curry County Extension Office needed to have done. And I stayed the night last night in Clovis. Now, traditionally, and it was true in this case, I stay the night trying to at state parks. And a lot of people kind of look on that as kind of either being crazy or stupid or, I don't know, especially now. Today is like the 28th of November, 2006, and, you know, it's the end of November, beginning of December. It was cold last night. I don't know how cold it was because I don't take the thermometer with me because what's the point? It rained last night. Luckily, I had my I already had my tent put up. I did not get wet on the inside. It's a good tent. It does a good job. It rained, and then, of course, during the night, it got cold enough, it froze. So I had all kinds of frozen stuff on my tent. When I was shaking it off, usually during the summertime, even if it does rain or it condenses onto my stuff, you can just, you can just tap the rain fly, and most of the water will just roll off. Quite a bit of water did roll off. Not everything had frozen, I guess. It wasn't a hard freeze. But a lot of stuff didn't roll off, and I didn't understand why until I actually took it off and said, oh, this is ice. So we had a pretty good amount of ice last night. I slept well, I had plenty of... I had plenty of covers to keep me warm, so everything worked out pretty well. I decided that this particular recording is going to be about character assassination. I don't want to name names because I don't think the names are that important. I think what is important is the kind of generalizations you can make based on it. And there are certain characters that I really don't respect and don't like. And I don't know if that's a common thing. You can certainly let me know. Go to quix.us. Go to www.quix.us, wherever you got these files from, and leave some feedback to me. And, I'll let you know what how it goes. I listen to the radio a lot, so a lot of things might come off the radio and the podcasts I listen to. And so I'm going to try to name names. You can probably guess who some of them are, but I'm not going to either corroborate anybody's guesses. I'm just not going to do it because I don't think it's important who the person is, because that just becomes a character assassination. I want to assassinate certain characteristics. Maybe it should be characteristic assassination. Anyway, I'll give you one example. I am not a big fan of the diehard loyalist. I listen to conservative talk radio a lot, and they tend to be very, very supportive of the current president. On the rare occasions they do disagree with what they say. Oh, he shouldn't have done that. Or, oh, he shouldn't have done that. And it's usually just like that. Oh, well, that was just a blunder, and if he would have been smart, if he would have listened to me, he would have never done it. And that's fine. But their accusations... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm getting tired. There are accusations all over that people are simply pawns for one political ideology or another. You know, people can always hide behind that and say, well, hey, I'm an ideologist, and that's the way I am. You know, several people will say that. The interesting part is about people that don't. It's always upsetting when you hear somebody who's obviously a liberal swear up and down that they're not. And you go, well, you're certainly espousing here a very liberal idea. And you go, well, then you need to call a spade if it's a... If it's a very liberal idea, go ahead and say, I don't care what it's defined as. Yeah, I support it. But then they'll come right back and they'll say, oh, no. I'm not doing that in the least. Especially if they think that that idea is kind of unpopular. It doesn't bother me to be unpopular because I'm not a popular person. I'm not, you know, I don't gain, you know, I don't have to make my living on the radio with my attitudes. You know, there's several people that do, that make their money off their attitudes, so their attitudes have to be, I don't want to say mainstream, but they have to attract a pretty big audience, a pretty loyal one. So, it makes it hard. I'm not a big fan of die-hard ideologists, and I have to say that on occasion I could have been accused of doing that, and it's not good because it just sets you up for traps. If you are supportive of another person because they supposedly hold the same ideology that you do, and if they're more powerful or you wish them to remain in power, so often you are in a position of having to rationalize your stance or what you think is right to try and jive with theirs. You know. And you're put into a position of actually having to rationalize these things. I'm repeating myself. Oi, I hope we're doing that. And you hear it all the time on talk radio, especially on the conservative side, because they feel like that the current leader of the United States is somebody that has to be supported by conservatives. And to be really honest, I don't consider him a conservative. His father wasn't a conservative, and he's really not particularly conservative either. Of course, he's able to take that label, run with it, and actually redefine it however he wants to, because it isn't that he is a liberal, I mean, that he is a conservative. Conservatism is him. You know, if you don't like what he's doing, well, then you're obviously, you can't be a conservative, because that's kind of like how it's defined now. You know? If you support him, you're a conservative. If you don't, you're a liberal. And that's kind of why it's really interesting, because it only becomes kind of a semantic argument. And you would just wish these people would just go, I'm a diehard Bush supporter. I will support George W. Bush until I die, or until he stops being president and there's somebody else that either needs supporting or getting ragged on. And that's just real honesty. You know, the fact that we throw these other labels around that are supposed to include a lot of people is just silly. You might as well just get down to saying who you support and who you don't support, and don't try to stick labels on it, because labels are just tools used by lots of people to try to make you come around to their way of thinking or to clearly define the enemy, you know. They are not us. And you go, well, I'm struggling with who us is. Who are we? And maybe I don't want to be a part of we. How about those apples, baby? How do you think I feel about that thing? I'm not going to have a good counter here. I don't even know if my codec's working right. It's still going, though. Okay, good. I was looking at the wrong number, and I'm looking down at the right number, and it looks a lot better. I don't like people like that. I also don't like people that that feel that the only way they can win an argument is by steering the conversation and by forcing you to abide by their rules. And I understand that on conservative on talk radio, these really are personalities. These are entertainers, you know. Now, you may say, oh, he's not an entertainer, he's a pundit, he's a commentary. He is a commentator. And you go, well, that's true, too, but he has to entertain, or else he isn't going to get paid. Let's be honest. And so that person has to keep control of their show. So there's some hosts that do a really excellent job of helping people to feel like they're really having a conversation. And there's other people that don't. And the one that's coming immediately to my mind doesn't do that very well. They're very much my job is either to find an intelligent person to disagree with or to just get tired of listening to people that can't be reasoned with. And, of course, the definition of reasonable is, are you willing to concede everything I say? Are you willing to concede that? But the commentator never does. Never concede. So I have a problem with people who don't, who aren't willing to change their mind. I know that's probably rule number one of radio is that, number one, you are the great epicenter. You are the pivot upon which everybody else moves. And if you make a change, if you decide that you're going to behave differently or have a different attitude, if you decide to change, you're toast. You're over. We don't want you anymore. You know, because that's dependent upon for advertising revenue, you know. There's certain advertisers that don't want to support certain ideas. And if you change your stance on a radio show, you might lose all those people, so you can't do that. So if we need somebody that's really, really firm in their convictions, and you better spout your convictions at the beginning, and by golly, you better stick by them. And people shouldn't be like that, because then you don't allow for growth. The possibility of saying, now, hey, wait a minute, let me give this an idea, let me see how I feel about this. Only to a certain degree can you feel confident enough that you can make sea changes like that. I can think of a couple of radio personalities that I know of that have done that, and that can do that. Most can't, for obvious reasons that they probably don't like to talk about. You know, they would prefer that be kept kind of a dark, dirty little secret that people just don't ever hear about. Really interesting. Let me think. Who else do I not? Come on to? Oh, God. The militant. The. You know, I don't mind people that have strong feelings, but not so. Well, you can have as strong a feelings as you like, in my book. But you don't go foisting it and forcing it on other people and saying, if you don't believe the way I do, then you must be an idiot. And one person I'm thinking of, a podcaster, you probably have never heard of them, and I won't mention their name, because I don't really want to advertise for them particularly. In case you're listening to my podcast, chance of you listening to his are much higher than of listening to mine. Because his is really easy to get, and mine's really difficult. Like, you know, I thrive on obscurity, I suppose. There He's actually an atheist, but he's a militant atheist. You know, and I'm sorry, and I'll offend them all right now, and I think they need it because they're actually playing footsie. I mean, they're not authentic at all. And they say, well, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in that stuff. And you go, well, if you're an atheist, then you really can't believe in right or wrong because it all has to be kind of relative, you know? Since you need to accept what everybody does as being at least halfway acceptable because there is no line in the sand. There is no place that says you can go to this point and not beyond when you're an atheist. There is no standard. And if you set one up, nobody has to agree with it. Nobody has to go there, you know. And they go, well, your country can do it. You know, we do it as a society. And you go, well, but if that person chooses to be outside of your society, what on earth right do you have to get weird at all at them? You really don't have one, now, do you? So, there becomes the great quandary that happens with all this. And I'm sorry, everybody has a God. Everybody has something which they cherish and for which they will die for. You may not say, well, I don't manufacture my God as a corporal being that smites everybody, and you go, no, that's not a definition of a God. A God is something that you worship. Most of them worship science and intellectualism, which is a really stupid thing to put any stock into because it changes too much. It changes all the time. And as time goes on, it's going to change more rapidly, faster. Most of these guys grab on to a couple of salient facts and base their entire reality, base all of life, on a couple of facts that they've come up with or that they've heard about or that they've read about. These are usually very well-read people who feel like that because they have read widely of the philosophies, of science, all these things, that they're somehow, and honestly, almost every militant atheist I've ever ran into, or I've ever heard anything from, has been really egotistical, and pretty much had to go on to say that anybody who believes in God is a schmuck and an idiot, and should be pounded on, or should be banned from intelligent conversation, or should just, you know, we shouldn't let them vote, because they're just not rational. And you're going, the funny thing is, rationality is a moving target. It's not absolute at all, but these guys would lead you to believe that it is the ultimate absolute. You know, we will do it this way, we will employ the scientific method. And you go, well, see, if the scientific method is so smart, or it is so logical, why wasn't it employed 1,000 years ago? Why were other methods used 1,000 years ago? You know? And how come that one won? Were there other ways, or was this really the only way that just made sense? So we stuck with this and then we shucked off the rest. And you go, I can give you hundreds of examples where the best didn't win. The most powerful one, or the one with the most backing, or this is just, there's so many factors to what actually wins out in a battle of wills or in the battle of anything. I remember you could compare it to the VHS versus Betamax sort of a thing. I think it was pretty well known, or it became pretty well established that the beta format was actually technologically superior. you know, it gave a better picture, recorded more detail. It actually worked better, and in its recording modes, it did a better job and used less tape. Just amazing. But it didn't win. It was actually even smaller, too. It was a smaller size tape. But people didn't like it, and nobody knows exactly why. I don't know if there's just more companies got behind VHS because of its licensing scheme. Sony wasn't really sharing their standard. If you wanted beta stuff, you had to buy a Sony box. I don't remember them really being big on sharing the technology with other places. Maybe they did, but maybe they didn't do it as aggressively. I don't know. But what happened was, the one that was clearly probably better lost. And that's what it is, you know. When you say, oh, this is true, because it survived the longest, and it all goes back to the survival of fittest, you know, kind of the Darwinist approach to things. And you go, I'll give you plenty of examples why VHS shouldn't have survived, Betamax should have, but it didn't. And it's not the survival of the fittest. It's just the survival of the one that survived. For whatever reason it ended up being. So, no. Do I think the scientific method is the be-all, end-all of all things? No. Do I think it's the prevalent one? Absolutely. Absolutely. Is it deserved? I don't know. Probably not. If we have anything to be our guide as to these things, we can just look around us. If everything worked in a rather scientific, logical, rational way, you know, why on earth haven't we figured out the perfect movie? You know, Hollywood would love to get the perfect formula to make gosh-awful lots of money at movies, and that they could apply time and time again and would make billions of dollars at movies, but they haven't. There's always these little indie films coming out that Hollywood won't touch because they don't think it's going to work, and they do very well. And then there's big Hollywood movies that are hyped up because they're going to be fantastic. They're going to make millions and millions and millions of dollars, and they don't. And so nobody's come up with a good formula for it. And, you know, and so that's one of my justifications for why this doesn't work. I tend to do a lot of my seeing how life works by looking at analogous things. You know, there's people who use the scientific method and say, well, this must be wrong because it didn't work in this circumstance. And I'm the first to say, number one, you can't control all the variables, which is the number one rule of the scientific method. You must be able to control all the variables, not just some of them, all of them. If you leave some variables undealt with, you know, those could color the entire thing. And so therefore your hypothesis is all screwed up, you know. It doesn't take into account what might be so. Or you end up putting in so many givens that by their nature can't be given because they're variables, that it's almost silly to do it. It's almost like, well, this isn't even scientific anymore. And what I'm saying is almost everything doesn't have the possibility of being particularly scientific. It could be a wonderful way to do a lot of things. Many rationalists, many scientific, kind of amateur scientific sorts, quasi-philosophers, pseudo-philosopher, sorry. Maybe I should make it more the way I think of them. Love to dig around the scientific method, but don't really apply the criteria to it, because if you do, you'll end up just having to constantly say, well, we can't use that method. Well, why not? It's because you can't be sure that this correlation really holds up. It may hold up 50 times, but the 51st time, if it doesn't hold up, you've got to throw the whole baby out. You can't use it anymore. And of course, they'll say, oh, well, no, there must have been bad record keeping. You know, maybe it was a bad sample. And you're going, well, who's not saying everything else is a bad sample, too? There's so many ways to jerry-rig this stuff. It's crazy. It's just nutty. So I don't have any more stock in the scientific method than I have with the religious methods. I listened to a man in his podcast, the one that I'm pondering now. He's really big on it has to be observable. He is weird about all rationality needs to be able to be seen. If God hasn't made an appearance, then the only rational explanation is there is no God. And you're going, well, that's stupid. I, by my will, can decide that I'm not going to be seen. And it doesn't matter how much conjecture's out there that I've died. If I haven't died, I'm not dead. And I may just be laying low. And, you know, and those guys say, oh, no, God would never lie low. And you go, why not? Humans would lie low. Oh, well, God has to be perfect, therefore he has to behave a certain way. And they start spouting all this criteria of what God has to be rational. And if he doesn't seem to be meeting some, of course, they get the convenience of being able to say, okay, you know, here's our criteria, and of course you can hand pick the criteria to make sure that it denounces God, which is always very, very convenient, and you might as well just let that kind of crap go, because it's just not gonna fly. You know? It is. It's a bunch of cherry picking. So, yeah, he's what we call a very convenient atheist. Most are. I really don't know of a true atheist. I really don't. You can usually pick apart their arguments just as easily by just saying, you conveniently get to define your God, and when your God doesn't make any sense, you can just throw him away. And they go, but you have to understand, that's your God. It's not my God. And neither one of those may be the God. Well, he doesn't do anything. So how do you know that? Well, you see no evidence. And you go, and what evidence would you have to purport that? I like to think of it as somebody looking down on a maze. You know, like you have a scientist and he's got some mice in a maze. They've got some way so that he can see what they're doing, but the mice can't see him. It's a one-way mirror. And he can make things happen. He can flip switches to move around walls in this thing. He can either dispense food or not dispense food when the rat steps on a switch. Whatever, you know. And I don't know how that rat feels that's down in there. We don't know that. We kind of conveniently say that the rat really doesn't have feelings besides pain. You know, the kind of, you know, animal type things. But we don't know that. We don't have a clue. We're just guessing. Or we're making, more often than not, what are we doing? We're making a supposition. We're just supposing that that's true and having to put the label given on it, so that we can continue to do what we're doing. and then we stack all kinds of facts on top of that given. And the problem is, if there's any way you can jerk that given out from under it, the whole stack falls. Every assumption you've ever made just comes right apart. Remember reading Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when we found out that the Earth was actually created by pan-dimensional beings, that their manifestation in our dimension were mice. And they said, oh, no, mice are, were they mice or were they rats? I don't remember, it doesn't matter. Anyway, they're always talking about, oh, those are the nice, cute things that we run tests on. And the guy said, wasn't that just diabolical? How they actually experimented on us by manifesting themselves as mice that our laboratory people could play with, and how moving in a different direction than what was expected could make the scientists change their entire philosophies of life, and it would just dribble down our whole culture, because whatever scientists say just absolutely has to be true. It's only been in the last few, maybe about the last 40 years or so, that we have had the courage to challenge the conventional wisdom of scientists. And it's causing all kinds of havoc, isn't it? And the scientists will swear up and down that the havoc is caused completely by your inability to just blindly follow what they come up with, you know. What are you use scientific methods to make people behave a certain way? And it's always fun to see it when people choose not to behave a certain way, because life's more complicated than that. We aren't rats. Because you can usually get rats to behave exactly the same way every single time through the application of certain rewards that everybody loves, punishments that they all hate. But it's always amazing. People will always frustrate you. People aren't always rational. And I'm kind of glad in a way, because if we were rational, if we were consistent, we would be dead, because there would be no room for growth. There would be nothing there at all. And that's really what we have the capability of. We can grow and become smarter and become more, and we can gain greater experience, where I think animals, or at least the scientists would tell us, I'm not sure if it's true or not, I don't know, animals don't seem to have that capability particularly. They can't rise much above their station at all. I mean, they can learn from experience, but it's mostly a kind of a conditioning learning. It doesn't bear any resemblance to the kind of things we can do. How come dogs haven't progressed to being able to hold things in their paws? You know, why not? You go, well, they can't. You go, well, I don't know that. I don't know if they can't. I've seen people with no limbs, with no hands, with only arm digits. I've been able to see them do amazing things that dogs can't do. And yet, seem to have the same basic capability there. You know? They've only got two basic appendages. They can't use their paws, the different toes of their paws, for anything besides just sitting next to each other. They don't serve any other purpose, as far as I can tell. Maybe to help the balance a bit. But they can't use them as separate digits to, like, grasp something. So the whole opposable thumb problem. But how come people who don't have opposable thumbs either, people who have who've lost their hands to something, and now only have stubs of their forearms to work with, how they're able to get food in their mouths, actually pick it up and take the food to their mouth, where a dog has to try to hold that food down with their legs and just chew the snot out of it. You know, there's a difference there as far as I'm aware. Why are we so much better than everybody else? I don't know. I don't think the rationalists, those who say, oh, there can't possibly be a God because I can manufacture a God that's just so silly that you shouldn't be able to believe it, so you can just walk away from it. And you go, oh, come on, guys. Come on. You can go through all the different rationales for how you decided that God didn't exist anymore, and I could probably pull the rug out from under every single one of them by saying, I think one of your basic assumptions may not be correct. I think one of your basic assumptions is wrong. You're not right at all. So there it is. What are you going to do with it? Where are you going to take it? Where's it going to go? I can't take it anywhere. You know, I said, I'm sorry. If you get upset because I pull one of your things, you say, well, you just can't do that. And he goes, sure I can. He says, you've chosen to with God. You keep trying to jerk the rug out from under God by saying, oh, no, I can take a really basic assumption and rip it right out. There is no God. Oh! And see, you think you're so smart. You're so tricky because you figured that out. Well, the same thing can be done to you. The scientific method doesn't hold up for a lot of things. The further we go, the more we find things that we can't explain. Now, it's usually on the subatomic level or on the really, 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 really macro level, really huge. And we don't see how that could be so. You know, and you have to kind of conveniently just ignore those things and say, well, we just haven't gotten the equipment enough to figure that out. And they go, no. You know, you can't say that. You can't say, oh, well, someday I'll find a way to discern that. When I can discern that, then everything's great. You know, and you go, well, what happens if there is no way to discern it? Or if you can't figure it out, you're just going to sit there and continue to tell a story that you say, oh, this is the absolute truth, when you go, you know what? You have no empirical evidence to back it up. And that's what you require. I don't require empirical evidence. In my thing about God, I can say, well, you know, there's some things that we don't know that God knows. And he can make things happen that appear magic to us. Do I think it's magic? No. I don't think it's magic. I think it's very, you know, I would have to say that I'm probably pretty actually rational, except that I'm willing to accept the fact that I don't know anything, and some things I don't think we're ever going to know. And there it is. You can write off every single miracle, every single strange event, and come up with some kind of a rational explanation for why that could have occurred, you know, just like they did with Moses when he turned the sea into blood. You know, one of the main jobs was to make sure that they could find rational explanations for why that was going to work. Well, I'm here. We're back in Chicken Carry. Very exciting. And, picking on various ideas. Hopefully I haven't been picking on people so much as I have been picking on atheists. You know, it doesn't matter. This is Jay Nemro. You're listening to Quasi-Indefatigable Zen Life. And have a great day.